On Sunday, October 6th from 2 to 4 p.m., tune in to WPKN Radio to hear live coverage of this year's 4th annual iWage Peace Walk in New Haven. The Peace Walk brings together 35 faith communities, former Israeli and Palestinian combatants, and hundreds of concerned area citizens to publicly make a commitment to honor and protect Jews, Christians, Muslims, and all people of faith and no faith here in the United States, Israel, Palestine, and the world. Participants in the Peace Walk affirm the belief that we do not need to agree on everything to work for peace and justice. For an afternoon of making real the slogan, thinking globally and acting locally, join WPKN for a live broadcast of New Haven's iWage Peace Walk, Sunday, October 6th, from 2 to 4 p.m., right here on WPKN Radio, 89.5 FM, streaming online at WPKN.org. For more information on the Peace Walk, visit iwagepeace.org. And I'm very happy to be one of the participants in that live broadcast. That's this Sunday, October 6th. We'll be covering the important iWage Peace Walk in New Haven. That's from 2 to 4 p.m., and we'll have a little bit more about that in the next few minutes. But first of all, I wanted to welcome to our program Bruce Barrett. He's the founder and principal organizer with the group iwagepeace.org, who's going to run down some of the events that are coming up on this Sunday and a subsequent panel discussion that'll happen a week later. And we'll also be talking with two of the former Israeli and Palestinian fighters that will be among those participating in both those events. Bruce is with them right now. But first of all, Bruce, thanks so much for coming on the program tonight to talk about the Peace Walk.
Oh, you're most welcome, and thank you, Scott, for inviting us to be on your show.
So it's an important event, and I think it's significant that you and the many people around the New Haven area have the vision to think about the situation locally, the conflicts that exist locally, and sort of connect the dots to things that are happening across the globe, and particularly in the Middle East, very conflicted part of the world. But maybe run down for us briefly what will be happening this Sunday and then the panel discussion on October 13th.
Well, this Sunday, there's one great event, which is the Peace Walk, and it has several different parts. So you arrive in New Haven. I recommend you get there between 1:30 and quarter of 2, so you can park somewhere on Temple Street or in the parking lot that's open there on Temple or around the green. And the Nation Drum Corps will be playing. It's some high school youth locally in New Haven. They're going to be playing from 1:30 to 2, so you can hear some really terrific, sharp drum beats. And then at 2 o'clock, we're going to begin the program, which is pretty straightforward. We're going to hear, first I'll give an opening address, welcoming people and explaining the walk. And then as a group, because remember there's 35 faith communities coming together, religious and non-religious, so there's mosques, synagogues, and churches, 35 of them that have signed on to the walk. And we have T-shirts that actually say, we do not need to agree on everything to work together for justice and peace. And it has the name of all 35 of those organizations, those houses of worship. So we expect, last year we had about 400 people, so maybe we'll top that. So we'll begin, I think there'll be a blowing of the shofar or something representing our Jewish family, brothers and sisters, and the rabbi will come on stage, and we will read together a pledge, a unity pledge, promising that in recognizing our Jewish family, our Jewish community, symbolic by Rabbi Josh Ratner, who will be there on stage. And we will promise to, in so much as it's within our ability, to defend, protect, and honor our Jewish family and our Muslim family and Christian family and all people around the world, but specifically in New Haven, in the United States, in Israel, and then in Palestine. And then Rabbi Ratner will give a brief reply welcoming us and his thoughts on the current issues that surround us. And then together as one family, we're going to walk down Wall Street, and we have a police escort from Yale, from the New Haven Police Department, are giving us a nice escort so we can all walk safely down Wall Street and find our way all the way to Broad at Christ Church, Christ Episcopal Church. And we're going to read the same pledge, but this time specifically identifying our Christian family, promising, again, to respect and honor them, recognizing their historical place in our community, as we will have done already with our Jewish brothers and sisters, and promising to honor and protect and defend them here in the United States, in Israel and Palestine. And then Father Cobb will give a brief response. And then we're going to walk together, again, the same family, all the way to Masjid al-Islam, which is a mosque in town right near St. Ray's. And the walking is really a beautiful fall day. It's an enjoyable walk. It's not very far. And we're going to read the same pledge together. We have a program, so everyone's on board. And we're going to make the same pledge, recognizing our Muslim brothers and sisters, and promising, and that mosque is symbolic of our entire Muslim family, and promising to honor, respect, and protect them in so much as it's within our ability in New Haven, in Connecticut, in the United States, in Israel, and in Palestine. And then the Imam, Hasif Hanan, will give a reply. And then that ends the walk. There'll be a reply from me, a charge, really, saying we've had this pledge, so let's go forward and do it. Let's attend other events, not just IOH peace events, but other events where we can learn about the issue in Israel and Palestine, learn about racism here in the United States at home, and be proactive in making a difference. And we'll list some of those events. And then there'll be either a bus for people that are tired of walking to take them back to the green, and Yale University was really kind to donate their shuttle bus for that purpose, and they'll just keep driving that route until everyone's home safe. Or they can just walk down Chapel back to the green, which is what most people did last year, but we did have a good 50 or 100 that wanted to take that bus, and I don't blame them. So that's the peace walk, and it's an exciting way to humanize people that we normally don't meet, because how many of us have been to a mosque? How many of us, if we're Jewish, have walked inside Christ Episcopal Church, which will actually walk inside the church? How many of us have walked and talked with a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian, if we're from one of those other faiths, and thought about and reflected upon the challenges that face us at home and abroad? And there's some real challenges, obviously, since we're in right now, peace negotiations are taking place. There may or may not be decisions, and we need to be unified and together in this.
Bruce, we will get the phone numbers and websites at the end of this conversation after we speak with two of the members of the Combatants for Peace group. But just for shorthand and make sure everybody can jot it down quickly here, your website is iwagepeace.org, correct?
That's correct, iwagepeace.org, or you can even go to iwagepeacewalk.org, and that takes you right to the Peace Walk page. And I should have pointed out, Scott, I'm glad you reminded me, that walking with us are my personal heroes, the Combatants for Peace. And we'll have four Combatants for Peace walking with us, and that's two Israeli and two Palestinians from the organization. IWG Peace has sponsored their tour here in the U.S. They've flown in from the West Bank and from Israel to share with us their work of nonviolent action. Their organization consists of former combatants, people who've participated in some way in violent resistance and have made a change and decided that nonviolence and humanizing the other is the way to bring justice and peace to the people in the West Bank who are living under occupation, and also the people in Israel who are living under fear. Their work is extraordinary, and they will be walking with us. And talking with you. If you come to the walk, you'll be able to meet them hand in hand and chat. And then during the week, we have several places, not just in Connecticut, where they will speak and share their stories. And one of those, as you know, is the Peace Panel on the 13th of October at Milford City Hall at 4 o'clock. So you can come and have 2 hours to really hear their personal stories, which I've been here. I'm in D.C. with them now on another tour, speaking tour, and they've been speaking. And it's wonderful to hear their work and the successes and the trials and the struggles they have as they bring reconciliation to their peoples.
Well, Bruce, it would be a great time to get both of the Combatants for Peace members that you're with tonight on the phone to talk a little bit about their work with the group and their participation in the IWG Peace Walk. Maybe we can first of all hear from Mohammed Aweda. He's a Palestinian social worker who spent time in Israeli prisons, where he witnessed the brutality and humiliation of life as a prisoner in this conflict, and now works with the Combatants for Peace. Let's talk to him.
Hello.
Hi, Mohammed. This is Scott Harris at PKN. Thank you so much for spending time with us on the phone.
Also,
So first of all, maybe tell us briefly about your story and how you came to join Combatants for Peace, working for peace and reconciliation in this very stubborn conflict that has roiled the Middle East for so many decades.
Okay, I will say it shortly. I'm living in East Jerusalem in a village named Silwan. Silwan, the biggest village in Palestine. It's more than 70,000 people, but also it's the hardcore in Jerusalem because it's a holy village for the Israelians. It's David City, and it's more than 1,300 settlers living there. Even it's in Jerusalem. We born in conflict, and we raised in conflict and fighting with the settler neighbors, and because the settlers is not settlement there, is that they taking homes. So one home is the Jewish and one home is a Palestinian, and above you is the Israeli. And so the conflict is beginning from the beginning of your life. I had been born to family, small family, me and father and mother and five children. And I am the older one. And in the first intifada, the four of my brothers were in jail. It's not unique that you are in jail. It's there was there more in the jail in the first intifada, more than half a million boys. So we're speaking about every two boys, one inside and one outside. So the normal that all of the boys is inside the jail. My father was a working tailor, so I was helping him because the intifada had damaged his work. So I went to work with him to help him for lawyers and to help him economic in the home. And my mother was so ill, and also my father was working the night, and I was taking my mother to visit my brothers. I didn't care about the intifada and anything because my dream was to work a lawyer. So I was waiting that when the university will open that I can go work and a lawyer, and I didn't want to make anything to disturb my dream. So one day, one of the leaders of the police there came to my mother and told her, even she was so sick because she having cancer, he told her, I will not give you any holiday to be happy in any holiday. So every evening holiday he was coming and taking one of my brothers. One day I having the one brother, and he was making a lot of problem for the police, and he was 16 years old. So they took him, and like every time that they taking him, in the next day, me and my father taking a lawyer and going to the police station, but we didn't found him. And they said for us, the friends, that he's in the hospital. We went to the hospital, and we found him that he had broken shoulder and hand. And when we asked him, he said that the police said that how much time you can take him and bring him. They putting a bucket in his head, and they broken his head and shoulder, and they threw him in the cemetery next to our village. It's the Jewish cemetery that it's in David City. It's next to Silwan. And in that day, I felt and I realized that the intifada came to my home. It took from me my brother. And the Muhammad that he don't care, he doesn't care, and but just he is caring about his brother and how to revenge. I remember in that day we attacked the jeep that the soldiers had broke my hands of my brother, and after few days they took us to the jail. We didn't speak, so they can have you 6 months if you don't speak and release you, but if you speaking you can sit 6 years. And after they released me, and in that days I remember that in the jail that you seeing more than 20 child is living in one room, fighting about bread and milk and cheese and sweets, because they still children. And you don't have in the jail, you don't have just one thing, the time. You don't have anything. And you, and not like all the Israelis saying that the jail is learning how sympathy and love and nonviolent. No, with all of my sorry, the jail is learning just hatred and hatred and hatred to the occupation and to the Israelis and to the soldier. And you wish just you want to get out just to revenge for your days that you are in the jail. I went away. I went to learn a lawyer. They didn't accept me because then they saying that I am out of law. So they threw me from the university and I didn't learn. And then the second, then the I went to work with my father, and then Oslo came, and then we said it's okay. The light had come, and we having our liberty. After this, everything had exploded in our faces and become the second intifada. In the second intifada, I said that's it. I was married with three children, so I said I don't want my children and my nephews to be like their father and their uncle. And we begin to work with nonviolent. My village in the East Jerusalem, but in the end we think that we also should work with another partner, the Jewish partner. We look after organization, and we meet a lot of organization that we met. One is the best, that her agenda is the same with our agenda, and it was combatant of peace. And from that time, I'm speaking with you from 6-7 years, we're working together. And I know that the way is so hard, so far away, but I think that one day we will see the freedom and one will see the liberty.
Mohammed, thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending time talking to us about your experience growing up in a very conflicted part of the world, and your choice to work for peace through nonviolence. And thanks for participating in this I Wage Peace Walk. Maybe we can speak while we still have a little time left. We'll speak with Erez Crispin, your colleague there.
Yes. Here. Here is my hero.
Thank you.
Hey, Scott. Good evening.
Erez, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us on your program.
Erez, you're a former captain in the Israeli Army, now in charge of foreign affairs work with the group Combatants for Peace. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your own personal journey from being in the military for Israel and then working for peace with this very unique and effective group with former fighters from Palestine and Israel alike working for reconciliation.
Okay, indeed I was an officer in the Israeli Army. My rank was captain. My starting point was different than my current views. I grew up in a family with political opinions leaning towards the right. And so my personal views regarding the conflict, regarding the Palestinians, were shaped accordingly. I believe that all Palestinians are potential terrorists, that all the Arabs, including the Palestinians, didn't want peace with us and practically wanted to chase us out of Israel. I believed that the occupied territories are ours. And above all, I believed that in order to survive, we have to be strong and aggressive in terms of military force. And so I joined the army in 1987, just before the first Intifada broke out. And soon after, we were sent during an officer course. We were sent to the Gaza Strip, to the area of a refugee camp called Deir el-Balah. And it was my first time in the occupied territories. Until then, my views were based, you know, on media, on my family, on things that I thought about the conflict, about stereotypes. It was my first time to test my views against reality. There we did the things that you do in an occupied territory. During the night, we used to raid houses of Palestinians in the refugee camp, turning the houses upside down, searching for wanted people. during the day we used to, you know, to install roadblocks, to impose curfews, to chase and shoot Palestinians who threw Molotov bottles and stones and so on. The truth is that I was shocked by the living condition in the refugee camps. I didn't know that these conditions were so bad. I couldn't overlook, as much as I wanted, but I couldn't overlook, you know, the distress, the hopelessness, the helplessness, the humiliation of people when we entered their houses. And above all, I couldn't overlook the absurdity and the pointlessness of our presence there. It made me realize that with all my views regarding the conflict, regarding the occupation, occupation is not only land, as I thought before, but it is also and mainly people. And that our job at the end of the day was practically to deny the human rights of these people in order to maintain this occupation. So the time in the occupied territory, my military service actually made me to change my views, to have a shift in my views. It took years. It wasn't instant. I then served as a co-judge in a military court that actually the Palestinian detainees would be brought in. And it was kind of a kangaroo court, you know, that was done according to, not according to international laws or the Israeli law, but according to martial law, military laws. We don't have enough time, you know, to describe it. I would say in one sentence, it was a kind of a kangaroo court. And this made me, again, it contributed again to the shift in my views. But it didn't do anything, you know, I didn't stand up and act in order to try to change reality. I continued with my military service. I continued with my life after my military service. And only after a few years, I really decided that a situation is so bad that I need to do something and not just speak about the situation. And the trigger that caused me to stand up and act was a type of a meeting that I attended for the first time. This meeting was with Palestinians. Until then, I met Palestinians only through, we call it through the gun sites. I met them only in circumstances, in military circumstances. I decided to go and meet Palestinians face to face as human beings. I joined such a meeting that Combatants for Peace organized. We usually organize such meetings in order to enable Israelis and Palestinians meet each other. And what happened to me is what usually happens to people that attend such meetings. They come with animosity, they come with prejudice, they come with stereotypes, they come with views that we are conditioned regarding them by the press, by our environment, by our fears. And when you meet this enemy face to face, what happens, what happened to me, is all these stereotypes, all these images suddenly collapse. You suddenly see the person behind the dehumanization. You suddenly see the person and you see that he is similar to you. And so I continued to meet Palestinians. I continued to understand their situation. I visited them. And at some point I decided that it's enough. I need to do something. And I joined Combatants for Peace. And I've been with Combatants for Peace ever since.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey on how you came to work with this group advocating nonviolence and that path towards reconciliation. Appreciate that so much, Erez. And maybe we could speak to Bruce Barrett again before we have to sign off.
Okay, just a minute.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bruce. We only have about a minute left here. Please tell our listeners as they're tuned in to our special program on the I Wage Peace March about the event coming up following Sunday on October 13th, a panel discussion with members of Combatants for Peace.
Sure, and, on October 13th.
And certainly give the website as well.
Oh, sure, www.iwagepeace.org.
iwagepeace.org. And on Sunday, October 13th, come to Milford City Hall, right in the downtown, at 4 o'clock. And from 4 to 6, you get to hear the combatants for peace. There'll be four of them, not just the two you heard, share with you their stories. You'll be able to ask them questions and find out, gee, what are you talking about? This sounds terrible, or I agree with you, and interact with people who've been there. At City Hall. There's a number of other events. There's also an event on October 5th at the Church of the Holy Spirit in West Haven at 3:30. We have a lot of other events. They're out of town, however, or private events. They're going to be meeting with some youth at risk in Bridgeport. And, Scott, I just want to say that for those that hear, there are, of course, violent people and people that wish to harm Israel. But what I found when I went to the West Bank and what the combatants are letting us know is that conditions are so deplorable for so many of the people there that sadly we're breeding people to hate us. It's been a long occupation, and they're here to share how they're reconciling, how they're coming together as human beings and trying to correct that problem. So rather than make more people that hate us, we can build friends and create two states side by side. And they're wonderful.
Bruce, thanks so much for arranging this conversation. Thanks so much for all your work over the years and the Billboard for Peace and the documentary film that you worked on, as well as this I Wage Peace Walk today. We're very happy that we could speak with you tonight. And again, the website to get more information about all the events that the group I Wage Peace is working on is iwagepeace.org.
Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you, Bruce. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night.
And that was Bruce Barrett. He's the founder and principal organizer with the group iwagepeace.org.